Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, September 8th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. U.S. Representative Jayapal hosts a resistant lab that teaches resistance in Spokane. Palouse Pride has hundreds of people in East City Park this Saturday. Refugees in Idaho lose food and health benefits under federal budget bill. And roadless rule could put 2 million acres of national forest land in Washington at risk. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. But first, world headlines from Feature Story News, the Pacifica Radio Network, and the Public News Service. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Democratic U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal of Seattle attended via Zoom the Neighborhood Watch Party, attended by about 40 people at Darcy's Restaurant in Spokane yesterday. It was a training session for resistance called Resistance Lab.
I think Americans, all of us, got pretty complacent about the survival of our democracy. I think many people thought that it would just continue through the toughest times, that we have checks and balances built in. But as we're seeing, those checks and balances aren't working. And, you know, if you kind of dissect that, the first big check that we have is the separation of powers, right? The idea that Congress will stop an out-of-control president from taking over all power. But to exercise that power, to get anything through the Congress, the majority party that is in power has to be willing to step up and stop that president, exercise its own authorities. If you have a majority party that has essentially become a cult party and refuses to exercise the powers of Congress, whether it's the power to create agencies or appropriate money or hold a president accountable for inciting an insurrection, then that check that the framers built into the Constitution actually doesn't work. The Constitution actually requires that both parties are committed to the Constitution and willing to speak up when an authoritarian force is undermining it. And unfortunately, as we've seen over the last 8 months, we don't have a situation where both parties, the majority party, is willing to speak up. Now, the second check that's built in is the courts. And here we can see we've actually had some really good temporary injunctions. We've won a number of cases in lower court decisions. But increasingly, what we're seeing is that the Supreme Court has been overturning those lower court decisions, undermining the decisions of lower courts and consolidating power in the Supreme Court alone, sometimes with no explanation at all when they overturn a decision. Now, we know that the Supreme Court is stacked with several corrupt justices who have been getting luxury vacations and RVs from the very billionaires who are propping up the current administration. And in some cases, the administration has even disobeyed court orders or at a minimum gotten in the way of judges' orders. So in this situation where an authoritarian leader has overrun Congress and then also either on the verge of or is overrunning the courts, the only other check is in the power of the people. This is the last and the most powerful check that the framers intended, is the people. And we can see this very clearly in history, our own history, as well as examples from other countries. Governments and institutions ultimately are taken over by dictators, by authoritarians. They are not what save people from dictators. It is the people who do that. It is large-scale mass movements of people that are our best line of defense. Now, I want to be really clear about something. This is not a one and done thing. There's no one silver bullet. This is only a 2-hour training. And the thing is that in countries around the world, democracies are never saved just by one person, one institution, or one event. This is grassroots, truly democratic organizing, which means that it might look a little messy sometimes, but that is the process. There isn't just one place to go. There's not one website to visit that has all the answers and all the direct actions you need to take. In fact, part of this is that we actually need to seed many actions and even experiment with the most effective ways to take on the unprecedented actions of this increasingly authoritarian regime that is here in this country. Now, at the same time, as we build a more coordinated structure, those moments of coordinated non-cooperation will also grow if we prepare for them and ensure that people are ready.
That was Democratic U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington. Another person who attended via Zoom was Erica Chenoweth, who is a Stanton Professor of the First Amendment at Harvard Kennedy School, and who is also an expert on different societies' declines into authoritarianism.
Aspiring autocrats like to project strength, permanence, and absolute loyalty and fealty. And that's to make people feel powerless, alone, demoralized, and demobilized. But people are not powerless, and they're never alone. Actually, people who oppose oligarchy and autocracy are in the majority in most countries around the world, though it can be hard for them to act like a majority sometimes, and especially under pressure. The other thing to remember is that autocratic power is not permanent. It is actually extremely fragile. Loyalty has to be constantly refreshed and rewarded. This means that there are near constant opportunities to dislocate the power holder from their pillars and make it harder for them to implement their plans. That means that movements don't have to convince the tyrant that they're right. They just need to get enough people to stop cooperating with him. So how does that happen? It happens through civil resistance, which is a method in which ordinary people decide to work together in a coordinated, strategic way to defend, demand, and improve democracy through nonviolent means. And what makes it successful are generally four key things. The first is numbers and momentum. The second is loyalty shifts and key pillars of support. The third is resilience and discipline in the face of repression. And the fourth is the use of a variety of nonviolent methods.
Chenoweth mentioned what she called the 3.5% rule, where historically it's very rare for anti-authoritarian movements to fail once they have achieved 3.5% participation thresholds. She said there's no guarantee that this number will be predictive going forward, but there's power in knowing that movements that reached that level of participation in the past succeeded. Sylvia Oliver is a cancer researcher and retired WSU Spokane employee. She told KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox she began working in cancer research after getting her PhD in genetics and cell biology from Washington State University.
So I have a very solid understanding of research, what it entails, how they get their money, how critically important research is, not only to the university, but to all people worldwide. And the other thing that is important to note about research, it's not something that is just done in a lab. The impact to the communities is that the university gets indirects. And so if you write a grant, at WSU, their contract rate was 50%. So if you have a $1 million grant, $500,000 is added on to support the university, to support the research, to support the labs, and all of that money comes in and goes out to the community. So you hire staff to work with you. You hire research assistants to work for you. And then you live in the communities, and that money then flows through that into the community. So all of the communities greatly benefit from research that is done and funded at the federal level. And so this is why it's so devastating, the cuts that have come, not through the big, beautiful bill, I don't believe. I'm sure there are probably cuts in there, but the cuts that Trump made that were illegal, that were that money was appropriated by the Congress, and then he took that money away. So now that money takes away not only from the research, but then I personally know a PhD candidate on the WSU Spokane campus in pharmacy who now has no idea what he's going to do. He's partway through his PhD candidacy, and that money was taken away. His lab has been shut down. So not only do they lose the research, they impact significantly the pipeline of researchers that are coming through. I can't even put words to it how this is a generational loss to the United States. And then the other side, now I'm retired and I'm working with Spokane Indivisible, and we are doing the best what we can to fight back against the Trump regime and everything they're doing to dismantle government. They are impact and to keep people poor, uneducated, and dependent on an autocracy once it gets established, or once they feel that it gets established. And one of the biggest issues here is in CD5, Congressional District 5, and that includes Pullman in Whitman County, is the rural, the impact on the rural health care. So rural folks don't understand what is coming to them, and so we are trying to reach out to them. But as we well know, the impacts to the rural aren't kept at the rural. The impacts to the rural are going to impact the suburban-urban region in Spokane. Because if they can't get care in their rural communities, they're going to come to the suburban-urban areas. So all of that, and now what's happening is that all of these insurance companies are seeing what's coming on the horizon, right, in 2026 when these Medicaid cuts come. And so they're coming back, and they're going to say, we need to prepare for this. And by preparing for this, we need to increase insurance rates. And so insurance premiums are going to impact every single person in the United States.
That was cancer researcher Sylvia Oliver. Sammy Perry, who is also a co-founder of Spokane Indivisible, spoke to Brenda Cox as well.
Our organization started in 2017 when Trump was elected the first time, because we knew what we were up against. We did not know that the second time was going to be this difficult. I mean, we are dealing with a wannabe dictator, and he's terrorizing the country, which is his every wish to do. That's what his objective is. He thinks that if he rattles us enough, we're all going to bow down. And turns out the opposite is happening. And so 2017, we got together and just formed a group. We have a steering committee with 12 members that are doctors and professors and scientists and politicians and a great group of people that's our steering committee. And then we also have an advocacy group. So our advocacy group is the ones that work hard to create the events and to put on the actions, events, and protests in the area. And we work with many other groups in the area to make that all happen. We are not the leaders. We're just one voice.
Okay. How did you think today's resistance lab went with Pamela Jayapal?
I thought it went really great. I have attended that before. When she very first started doing this, it was probably about 3 or 4 months ago, and this was huge. This was so much better than what it was the first time, and it related with so much more of what's going on. You can tell that they are keeping up with the current events, and we can all see this growing. And so they're facing it and giving us tools to face it and actions to take.
I noticed that the majority of attendees were mostly women, and there were 6 men here.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas or thoughts on why that is?
Well, I agree. I think it's affecting and impacting the women more than it is the men at this point. And I know that statistically, the percentage of women is at about 97% that are in the resistance movement. And I think that they see this as more clearly at this point of what the future could look like, not just for us, but for any minorities. And so I think that they're the ones taking the time, even though they have very little time, you know, to stand up and to speak out. It's the only way we're going to get this to stop.
That was Sammy Perry of Spokane Indivisible speaking at a neighborhood watch party for a streamed Resistance Lab event from Democratic U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal held in Spokane yesterday. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox contributed to this story. The tax and spending bill Congress passed in early July, sometimes called the Big Beautiful Bill, meant refugees and asylum seekers living in Idaho immediately lost access to food assistance and will lose access to Medicaid health care next year. Under the bill, refugees in the state will lose access to Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program by October 1st, 2026, and they will lose eligibility for private health care through the Affordable Care Act on January 1st, 2027, and will lose that through Medicare on January 27th, 2027. The bill also means refugees will have to pay a larger application fee to get a work permit under the temporary humanitarian parole. This summer, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP, removed refugees that have not yet obtained a green card. Idaho Office for Refugees Communications Manager Holly Beach told the Idaho Capital Sun 550 refugees have settled in Idaho since last fall. Beach said, "Providing people access to food and health care benefits has been a pillar of the resettlement program, because when they've first arrived, they've often had to flee their home country out of fear for their lives, so they don't have wealth built up or resources built up. Those are the really crucial months where those programs mean a lot to people." Beach said 70% of the adults who arrive are working within 5 months, but their first jobs usually do not include health insurance. Republican U.S. Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho, who as U.S. Senate Finance Committee chair was a major author of the Big Beautiful Bill, told the Idaho Capital Sun he would be open to reconsidering the revocation of public assistance for refugees. He said, "The part of the 900-page law that involved refugees was a, quote, political negotiation." Crapo said, "I wish I could answer it any differently than that. It's a small population, and it's one that is legally following the rules. It seems to me that is the kind of population that would justify a second look." You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by
Latah Wildlife Association, encouraging hunters to use lead-free ammunition for the benefit of their families, predators, scavengers, and the environment. Available online at facebook.com/Latah Wildlife Association. For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP. The Latah Recovery Center is a community of peer support for people dealing with addiction and mental health issues. Located at 531 South Main Street in downtown Moscow, the Latah Recovery Center offers a resource room, rotating calendar of life skills classes, mentoring for those beginning recovery, and telephone recovery services for those who can't make it into the center. All services are free. Find the Latah Recovery Center on Facebook for more information.
Hundreds were on hand in Moscow's East City Park Saturday for Palouse Pride. Here's Inland Oasis Board President Kathy Sprague.
"We have done Pride for many years. I remember the first Pride. It was 23 of us sitting at a picnic table in this park. This is not our largest year, but given the political climate and the state we live in, this is our most important Pride ever. We will not be silenced. We are not going away. You cannot legislate us into extinction. We will not go away. We are here. We are queer. We are from Moscow. We are from Pullman. We are from Palouse. We are from Genesee. We are from every little town surrounding this beautiful city of Moscow. And I want everyone here to introduce yourself to someone that you don't know, because it is vitally important that we build a coalition, that we build a stronger community, that we have each other's backs, because right now, all we have is each other. The corporate sponsors have abandoned Pride festivals all over the country. The University of Idaho has abandoned their queer staff and students and their staff and students of color. We have each other, and that is our greatest strength. And I want you all to go home feeling that you belong to something bigger than yourself, something so important that it will never go away. So I love you all. Have a wonderful day. See you tomorrow and tonight at the drag show. Thanks.
That was Kathy Sprague. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox spoke to a number of people who had booths or who were tabling around the park during Pride on Saturday.
My name is Gary Offerdahl. I'm from Lewiston, and I'm here with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network.
What does it mean to you to be here at Pride?
For me, this is a great outreach opportunity to talk about the messaging we have about cancer advocacy and how that impacts the LGBTQ plus community on an even bigger scale than it does across the board in so many different areas. So to be able to gather the stories of the people, a lot of times that aren't in the position to tell the stories to the legislators to affect the legislation that's coming through, that's my job, is to be that conduit, to gather the stories, take them to Washington, D.C., take them down to Boise to talk to our legislators about legislation for access to health care, equity across the board for health care and for treatments, advocating for early detection treatments, and for insurance to cover the things that they should.
Well, I just heard on the news that the current administration is curtailing cancer screenings, and that will impact a lot of people. Have you heard that?
With the cuts that are proposed for the CDC, for the National Institute of Health, in fact, next week I go to Washington, D.C. to talk to our state legislators, and that is one of our top asks, is for the maximum increase in funding for cancer research, for any of the treatments that are going on right now, to help support the research, help support that. Those treatments and move forward and not just leave people out on their own to try to deal with something that is absolutely life-threatening.
My name is Matt Hill, and I am the organizer of the Bootleg Garden Club here in Moscow, Idaho. We are a highly unofficial organization, and we grow food and give it to people who need it, just at its bare bones. We work in our own yards to grow, and also we have several landowners who've shared their garden areas, and so we've been able to grow quite a bit of fruit, tomatoes, apples, squash. We did kale earlier this year before the flea beetles descended upon us.
Is all that kale out at Idler's Rest ruined?
It looks like green Swiss cheese now, so okay. We're kind of done with it for now, but it gave us a really good harvest. We got probably 4 good harvests off of it this year.
Excellent.
Yeah, so, no, it's just been really excited since, you know, the presidential election. I've gotten really worried, and I've come to the conclusion that the only way we're going to get through this is to build community and build security, and I think food security is just key to everything else. If we don't have enough to eat, we can't do anything else. So that's really been my focus.
Tell me about how it's going out at Wynn's place, the greenhouse.
Yeah. So Wynn and Sue, a very nice couple here in town, have a greenhouse with several raised beds in it. And they very generously let us start growing there. We had tomatoes going. We 2 weeks ago, we got a huge harvest of Cherokee purple tomatoes. They were amazing. Earlier this year, we got a bunch of sweet peas. We got lettuce out of there. We've gotten a bunch of bell peppers. And hopefully coming down the track is more tomatoes and some eggplants.
I'm Gray from the LGBTQ Plus Center. Well, I'm not from there, but I like to go there a lot.
Okay.
And that's at WSU?
That is at WSU, yeah. We're the center's located in the Cub on the fourth floor.
Well, tell our radio listeners about the organization.
So the LGBTQ Plus Center is a wonderful source for community resources, particularly geared towards the WSU community. But we also really love supporting U of I students. They're always welcome in our center, always welcome at our events. We have a free fluid fashion closet, which is like a free community thrift shop. We've got a lot of free snacks and drinks. And we also provide a lot of community resources, including zines. And it's just really important to us that we make all of those as available as possible to everybody who might need or want them.
And what does it mean to you being here today at Gay Pride at East City Park in Moscow?
Yeah, this is actually my first time doing any sort of Pride event ever. And so it's really wonderful to be here and be surrounded by a lot of other really wonderful and talented and just proud queer people. And it's really lovely to be with the, be at the LGBTQ plus booth, and be able to share the resources that we have with a bigger community.
Yeah. I'd say there's a few hundred people here, don't you think?
I would say so. Yeah, we're kind of in a corner, so we don't see as many people. But I don't mind a little bit slower traffic.
Haley Noble, I'm the executive director at the Latah County Historical Society, and we are here at Palouse Pride in the Park to, make sure that everyone knows that history is for everyone, that we want to show queer history within our archive, within the historical record, and we're here just promoting all of those ideas. We're also advertising and promoting the Traveling Smithsonian exhibit called Voices and Votes, Democracy in America. That is on display at the University of Idaho Library until October 3rd. So that exhibit is free to visit for everyone. And in addition to that exhibition, we have additional programming coming up along those exhibit themes, examining, you know, why is voting important? What does it mean to be a citizen? How have voting rights changed over time? So next Tuesday, September 9th at 4 p.m., we have the screening of the Idaho Public Television documentary, Ahead of Her Time, Women's Suffrage in Idaho, plus a discussion with Dr. Rebecca Schofield. She's a history professor, and she knows all about American history and suffrage and why that is so important to talk about today. So we're really glad to be here, talking to people, making sure they know that history is for them.
I'm here with Kathy Sprague at the Moscow Pride?
Palouse Pride.
Palouse Pride, yeah.
Kathy, tell me about it.
Well, we've been doing this in Moscow, and it represents the two county regions, Latah and Whitman. We've been doing this for over 30 years.
Yeah.
Actually, I've been married 33, so I think about 32 years. Uh-huh. We've been holding a festival here, and it gets better every year.
Isn't it amazing? So tell me what's going on. Try and remember what you said. I mean, like, how are you feeling about what's going on in the country?
It's absolutely terrifying what's going on in the country. They are taking PrEP away from some of the gay men. I'm old enough to have lived through the AIDS crisis. I'm terrified. There's a younger generation that doesn't know how to use condoms. We need to start educating them. We need to start taking care of ourselves. The government isn't going to come rescue us, and corporate America doesn't give a flying about us. So it's up to us as a community and individuals to just pull together, take care of each other, have each other's backs. We're here, we're family.
Yeah.
That was Kathy Sprague speaking with KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox at Palouse Pride, which was held in Moscow's East City Park Saturday. Nez Perce Tribal Police have arrested a Lapway man for second-degree murder for killing a woman who he said intruded on his property. Police arrested 30-year-old Christian Forsloff early Friday evening in the 1100 block of Thunder Hill Road in Lapway. Nez Perce County Sheriff's Department says deputies found a woman dead of gunshot wounds to her upper body and a man who was wounded by gunshot to his upper body as well. The Lewiston Tribune reports a crew took the wounded man to St. Joseph Regional Medical Center. According to a police report, Forslov's fiance called the sheriff's department to report one male and one female had been at their home, and they believed their shed had been broken into. As deputies were on their way, the caller said her fiance had just shot the two suspects. The report said Forslov believed the man and woman entered a shed on his land, and he chased them at gunpoint to about a quarter mile away from his home. The news release said neither victim was armed. The news release said Forslov exchanged words with the woman and, quote, Forslov fired his pistol because the female was pointing her finger at him and walking towards him aggressively.
The high suicide rate in Idaho is under scrutiny during Suicide Prevention Awareness Month in September. The state had the fourth highest suicide rate in the nation in 2023. The Idaho Crisis and Suicide Hotline is among the organizations working to reduce that number. The hotline fields calls in Idaho to 988, the suicide prevention number established nationwide in 2022. Hotline Director Lee Flynn says the number of calls to her organization has increased in the past 3 years. They have also established a statewide mobile response team that's available 24/7.
When a person needs more support than we can provide by telephone or by text, we are now able to dispatch a mobile crisis team, and these teams are in-person teams of two people who can really meet a person where they're at and provide face-to-face crisis support.
There were more than 450 deaths by suicide in 2023, according to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. It was the seventh most common cause of death that year. However, the Idaho Crisis and Suicide Hotline has faced hurdles to serving people under the age of 18 since a law went into effect last year requiring parental consent for the medical treatment of minors. Flynn says her line can help in cases where someone's life is in danger, but in other situations where the young person is asked to get parental consent for treatment, some choose to hang up instead.
That's not ideal because they might still be struggling, they might still need someone to talk to, and that's precisely one of the challenges that we're having in providing crisis support within this law.
A bill was introduced during this year's legislative session to correct the unintended consequence of the parental consent law and passed in the Senate, but stalled in the House. Flynn says there are other ways to accommodate young people on the hotline. She says parents sometimes call 988 to show their kids what the service is like.
They can call us and just say, hey, I'm calling with my son, I'm calling with my daughter, and I just wanted to let them know what happens when a person calls 988. And a parent can also call us and give consent for their child to talk to us, and we can keep that on file.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Conservation groups say the proposed removal of the federal roadless rule would open pristine Washington state forests to commercial logging. Adopted in 2001, the roadless rule safeguards nearly 60 million acres of national forest land, including 2 million acres in Washington state, from road building and logging. Tom Uniak with Washington Wild says dismantling the rule would put much of the state's remaining old-growth forests that provide salmon habitat, clean drinking water, and outdoor recreation opportunities at risk.
Roadless areas include really popular trails around the state, like Lena Lake in the Olympic Peninsula, Maple Pass Loop up in the Mattow Valley, Mount Dickerman, and the Kettle Crest Trail out in eastern Washington.
Federal officials say the rule's removal will help land managers better protect communities from wildfires. But research shows over 90% of all wildfires occur within half a mile of a road. A shortened 3-week public comment period on the proposed policy change runs through September 19th. Uniak says the public process to create the roadless rule was the largest ever, involving 600 public hearings across the country. He adds more than 1.5 million comments were collected, almost all of which were in favor of creating roadless protections.
You juxtapose that with what's going on right now, which is a 21-day public comment period, which is the shortest I've ever seen from the federal government ever. This is just the next attempt of a larger attack on our public lands.
An earlier provision to sell off federal forest lands, including roadless areas, was originally in the Big Beautiful Bill, Uniak adds, until a group of lawmakers pushed it out.
A bipartisan coalition of hunters and sportsmen and others basically put their foot down and said that we're not going to vote for that provision if it's in the bill.
UNIAC says anyone interested in Washington's public lands can comment on the roadless rule by September 19th. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
A coalition of Montana groups is aiming to put a constitutional amendment on the 2026 ballot to shield judicial elections from partisan influence. The group Montanans for Nonpartisan Courts cites an unprecedented surge of bills in the last two legislative sessions that sought to politicize the bench. Spokesperson Katie Butler says the goal is to ensure judges are accountable to citizens, not political parties.
So the constitutional initiative that we have submitted and is now working its way through the government review process would ensure that judges continue to be elected on a nonpartisan basis at all levels, and therefore are accountable to the citizens of Montana, not politicians, party bosses, or political donors.
Montana has elected judges on a nonpartisan basis since 1935. The proposed initiative would apply to all judicial elections from the state Supreme Court down to local courts. Supporters of partisan judicial elections, including some state lawmakers, argue that party labels provide voters with clearer information about a judicial candidate's philosophy and create more accountability. Butler argues that introducing partisanship and the potential for large political donations into judicial races could undermine the impartiality of the courts. She says everyday Montanans want judges who interpret the law based on the Constitution, not a party platform.
We don't think that Montana voters want judges that are coming at the law through the lens of a political party. We want judges that are looking at the Constitution only and don't have that kind of bias.
The proposed amendment would also prevent the legislature from creating new courts that are not elected on a nonpartisan basis. The initiative is currently undergoing a government review process by the Secretary of State and Attorney General. The campaign must then gather tens of thousands of signatures from across the state to qualify for the November 2026 ballot. A second group, Montanans for Fair and Impartial Judges, has also launched an initiative focused specifically on keeping state Supreme Court races nonpartisan. This is Tremel Gomes for Big Sky Connection.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. The weather for the Moscow-Pullman area, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight, widespread haze around midnight, otherwise partly cloudy, low 52. 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 2 p.m. tomorrow, then a slight chance of showers after 5 p.m. Widespread haze after 10 a.m., mostly sunny, high 73. 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms Tuesday night. Widespread haze, mostly cloudy, low 53. 40% chance of showers Wednesday. Widespread haze before noon, partly sunny, high 77. 70% chance of showers, possibly a thunderstorm on Wednesday night. New precipitation between a quarter and a half inch of rain possible. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, low 53, and a 60% chance of showers Thursday. Then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm in the afternoon, mostly cloudy, high 71. Currently 81 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints is up next. And the air quality in the region at this moment is moderate. After Flashpoints, Bex will be on the air to play music for you. Her show is called Spotlight. And we will also have Chia Pet on the air playing music for you 9 to 11 tonight. And then Nardwar the Human Serviette's on at 11. So stay tuned. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palooza's organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. CAREFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.